Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. On June 21st, 2016, 20-year-old Tyler Stice packed his lunch and left for work. The community college student was living at home and working to save up money in hopes of eventually attending Northern Arizona University. That morning, Teller got into his prized possession, a black Ford Mustang, and drove off. But he didn't make it to work that day. 4 days later, his car would be found in the Hualapai Mountains, but there would be no trace of Tyler. Tyler's family had been seemingly followed by tragedy for years, and it wouldn't stop with his disappearance. It's been over 6 years since Tyler was last seen, and his case is filled with theories, with some wondering if his family's checkered past could have contributed to what happened, not only that day, but also the events that followed. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Tyler Stice. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. This week's episode is actually another Patreon suggestion.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, this time it is coming from Gemma H. She actually reached out to me on Instagram about this. And, you know, I was unfamiliar with Tyler's case, but after she suggested it, I obviously looked into it. And I immediately wanted to cover it. Not only is this just horrendously sad and, you know, hasn't gotten much attention, but without giving much away, it reminded me of a few other cases that we've covered, specifically those of Shane Donahue and Leah Croucher.
Oh, I get Daniel Robinson, too.
Yeah, I mean, we are dealing with Arizona, which is where he went missing. And
a crashed car.
No, not a crashed car.
I thought you said that they found his car.
They did. It wasn't crashed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and the circumstances surrounding his actual disappearance are also similar to those of Mason Smith, who went missing in Utah. And, you know, it's always interesting to me, and we see this as we go on and do more and more of these cases, like how there are similarities in so many of the ones that we cover. But for now, let's, you know, get into it. This is the case of Tyler Stice. Tyler Andrew Stice was born on February 8th, 1996, to Stephanie and Robert Brian Stice. So Robert goes by his middle name of Brian, so that's all I'll be referring to him. Tyler was born in Wyoming and spent his childhood there, but by 2016, when our story takes place, he and his family were living in Kingman, Arizona. Tyler's mother, Stephanie, had been married before and had two daughters. Her oldest, Jessica Curtis, was born in 1986. She later gave birth to Cassandra Aaron in 1991. Now, this family tree is a little confusing because Jessica also has another brother, Jeremy Curtis, but I don't think he's Stephanie's son. I think that's her father or adopted father's son. Because Jessica's biological father is a man named Charles Kelly, but she was adopted by Bert Curtis. And then at some point, there's a stepfather named William Dominguez who comes into this whole situation.
You already lost me.
No, I know. I lost myself. And so this was apparently all like within the first 10 years of her life, because again, you know, Tyler was born in 1996. And it was Stephanie and Brian Stice at that point. So I know that, you know, he was obviously in the picture then, but I don't have any record of when he and Stephanie got married or like when all of this other stuff happened. Tyler was close with his older sisters. His mother, Stephanie, originally worked as a cosmetologist, but later became a nurse. She worked long hours, so Jessica was often left to take care of her younger brother. Tyler was an avid gamer, and he and his sister, Cassandra, bonded over that. Stephanie has been said to have been controlling, but she and Tyler still apparently had a good relationship. Tyler was even close with his father, though that does seem to be because he didn't know the full truth about him. But we'll get to that in a bit.
Did I miss something?
No.
Because you said a whole lot of family members and all kinds of things. I didn't miss anything.
You did not miss anything. We're going to talk about it. The point that I'm trying to make with all of like the family members is that while Tyler grew up in, you know, a household with his biological parents who are married the entire time, it seems like for the most part, his sisters did not. His sisters had a much different experience growing up.
Okay.
Tyler was an introverted, sensitive kid. He enjoyed writing poems and taking photos. I mentioned in the intro that he was attending community college. His eventual career goal was to fly drones for a police department. Which, like, I didn't even know that was a position, specifically.
I mean, definitely not in my department. I don't know. Sure.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I mean, it sounds cool. Like, so yeah, I mean, so he was a responsible kid. He was living at home, but, you know, he was a good student in high school. Like I said, he was going to community college. He had a job. He was paying his mother rent to stay there. You know, he had his car like that he had bought himself. Like he was doing, you know, what you would want your 20-year-old son to be doing, basically. Like he had goals. He had ambitions, you know, though he did spend a lot of his time playing video games. So, yeah, I mean, that is how, like, he spent the majority of his free time. And in the online gaming world, he had several accounts on many different platforms. And one account was called Kira Zetora. And this was on the gaming platform IMVU. And this is actually not one that I've heard of before. And I meant to ask our oldest if he's heard of it, because he's, like, the big gamer in the family. But yeah, so IMVU is the platform that this was on. Now, this profile is interesting for a few reasons. One is that the gender was listed as female and the profile picture was that of a woman. And, you know, like that's not necessarily a red flag, like maybe a yellow, like who knows. However, the photo that he used was actually of a woman named Kira that he went to high school with. So again, Kira Zetora was the profile name, and he was using the photo of a real person named Kira.
And we're sure that this was his profile.
Yes. What's more is that his coworkers later reported that he had shown them a photo of the real Kira and claimed that they were in a relationship. Though, I mean, that doesn't actually seem to have been the case. As Kira Zetora, he often also posted about being in and out of the hospital, which was true of the real Kira who suffered from lupus. There were also Twitter and Facebook accounts made in the name of Kira Stice that were later found that were suspected to have been made by Tyler.
So we're thinking that he's obsessed with Kira.
Maybe. I don't know. Or he wanted to be Kira. Like, we don't know. There's a lot of confusion and speculation about all of this. Now, this had all been going on for quite some time, but it doesn't sound like anyone really like knew about it or, you know, figured it out until after he went missing, when, of course, people started looking into all of his online activity. So while it may be considered odd behavior, it didn't necessarily have anything to do with his disappearance in June of 2016. There was, however, a much more disturbing action that took place just days before Tyler was last seen. Mm-hmm. On June 19th, just 2 days prior to Tyler's disappearance, he went to a local Walmart and purchased a .22 caliber rifle. He then went to his second unknown store and purchased ammunition for the rifle. Now, Tyler was not outdoorsy. He did not hunt. He did not like camping. He did not like anything that had to do with the woods or anything of that nature. But he also wasn't known to be particularly interested in guns either. So this purchase was extremely out of character for him. From what I could gather, no one knew about this purchase until after his disappearance, when police were starting to investigate and they went through his financials and things like that. They were later able to verify the Walmart purchase through surveillance video, though I don't really understand how they would have known about the ammo. Because if they found that out through his financial records or surveillance footage, they would have known what store it was. So the only thing I can think of is either they maybe found an open box of ammunition among his things, but like couldn't connect that to the Walmart purchase, or they do know the store, but never released that publicly for whatever reason. I don't know why they wouldn't release that publicly when they released the Walmart information, but in any case, it was apparently two separate stores. Now, of course, everyone's thought immediately goes to suicide when somebody makes a purchase like this right before they disappear, especially when it's out of character for them. But it should be mentioned that there's no evidence that Tyler was feeling despondent or anything like that prior to his disappearance. And, you know, there's also the simple fact that his body hasn't been found. We've talked before about how people typically can't kill themselves and hide their own bodies.
Yes. But also the typical behavior of somebody that's suicidal is that they want their bodies to be, it's the opposite.
Right.
They want their bodies to be found. And oftentimes they will kind of lay out a scenario in their own head of who will find them and how it will be found, presumably for whatever reason that they killed themselves.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case.
No. But I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, of course, right? I mean, you know, again, take the Mason Smith case. At this point, suicide is a prevailing theory in that. But, you know, the belief is that he went out to the desert in Utah and took his own life there. And that's why he hasn't been found. Similarly, Tyler's car was found in the mountains, so there could theoretically be something similar at play here. But there's a lot more to this story. But first, let's get back to the timeline of his disappearance. On Monday, June 20th, Tyler told his mother that he was skipping work. Now, this was unlike him, but when his mom asked him about it, he said that he just needed time for himself. He apparently went out that day and kind of stayed gone all day, though we don't know where he was or what was going on.
So you said June 20th. When was this conversation with his mother?
Like that day. So that morning.
But we don't know exact times.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So his shift, it sounds like, started very early. So it sounds like, you know, and again, I don't know if he called into work, if he was just a no-call, no-show, but his mom, you know, realized that he was still at home when he shouldn't have been. And he was like, listen, I just need some time for myself. So like I said, he stayed out all day and then returned home that evening and then played on his PlayStation until about 1 a.m. But on Tuesday, the 21st, Tyler had to be to work by 6. So he woke up the next morning around 5, got ready, made his lunch, and left in his Mustang around 5:30. Everything seemed normal until that afternoon when Tyler's boss called Stephanie and told her that Tyler never showed up for a shift. Stephanie was his emergency contact at work, which is how, you know, his boss had her information and everything. This was also the second day in a row that he didn't show up. And so I don't know if, like I said, if he had called in on Monday or if he hadn't. So I don't know if his boss was calling because he had just missed Tuesday or because he had missed Monday and Tuesday. You know, so Stephanie was confused because, like, he got up, he left. It seems like he was going to work. And if he was going to blow it off, like, why would he have gotten up and left? He was up till 1 a.m. He had to wake up at 5. Like, that's 4 hours of sleep. You would think that he would just have stayed in bed if his plan was to not go to work that day. So Stephanie, of course, called Tyler's cell phone, but it went straight to voicemail. She then started calling around to family and friends, but no one had heard from her son. She kept trying to reach him, never got through. And so Stephanie eventually, I don't know how much, you know, later, called police to report Tyler missing. But Kingman police said that since he's an adult, she needed to wait 48 hours.
Of course.
48, this, not even 24, 48.
Well, any of these times are just completely made up. It's why do you have to wait a certain amount of time to declare somebody missing? Why? Because it's going to deplete your resources as a police department? It's just so infuriating. The missing persons cases lead to all kinds of other cases in the future. It's not just a missing person. So it seems to make sense that if somebody is saying, hey, this person is acting not in the ordinary capacity of their normal life, and they have gone missing from work, from home, from whatever, that maybe somebody should look into it, because it could save your police department time and money in the long run. Do the work up front. And if it leads to nothing, then it leads to nothing. Who cares? You're still getting paid hourly.
I mean, listen, you've been a cop for what, like 18 years or something? How many
it has been 18 years,
years of those 18 years, if you added everything up, was just like wasted time?
Like 17 and a half, honestly. Like, that's totally true. It's preparation for potential things.
Yeah.
But,
and listen, your job's different. This is not like what you're doing at all.
Sure, but come on, like,
yeah,
it's just dumbfounding to me to be so dismissive of somebody that could potentially be missing and just say, wait 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. And all of these numbers are arbitrary because they're like, they're just like, oh, well, they'll come back. I don't know. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. And God forbid it's a holiday weekend.
It just blows my mind.
So the 2 days passed and still no one heard from Tyler. Finally, a search did commence. On June 25th, 4 days after he was last seen, Tyler's car was located. But this only raised more questions for family and investigators. Tyler's car was located at the Deer Canyon Recreational Area, located in the Hualapai Mountains. The road that it was on is 46 miles long and begins in Kingman, where Tyler lived. Now, the car had presumably been there for 4 days, you know, since the day he went missing, but it was weirdly clean when it was located.
What do you mean by that?
The outside of it was very clean. Like, you know, this is a rural area, very dusty, dirty, but the car didn't look like it had been there for 4 days.
Do we know what the weather was like over those 4 days? I mean, had it rained before? I mean, because that could give a clean appearance to a car.
Yeah, I don't believe it had, but I'm not positive. But, you know, it was a black car. And as we know, like, black cars tend to show everything. But when they found it and looked into it, the interior was also clean, with no signs of a struggle, foul play, anything like that. There was a cup of chai in the passenger side cup holder, which seems like normal and whatever, but the family immediately marked it as odd because Tyler apparently hated tea. So, like, he did not like the taste of tea. Like, he was not a tea drinker.
Well, as somebody that barely tolerates tea, but also hates chai, like, that should be a red flag.
I don't know. Chai is like the best tea. So
no, but if it's out of character of the person.
Like, yeah.
That is something to red flag.
Well, exactly. And his family immediately keyed in on that. There was also the fact that this cup was in the passenger side cup holder. And that made them believe that he had somebody in the car with him. Because, again, like, he didn't like tea. It wasn't in the driver's side cup holder. So they thought, oh, it was a passenger who had been drinking it.
This is a Ford Mustang?
Mm-hmm. 2006.
Are we talking about the cup holder in the door?
So that there's so been a lot
you're,
of...
You're talking about passenger versus driver's side. This is a coupe.
Yeah.
So you've got the center console, which
right.
could potentially have two cup holders, but that doesn't designate who is the driver and who is the passenger. So the only way that you would be able to delineate between the two would be...
If it's the door. Yeah. And there has been a lot of like speculation. There have been a lot of questions about that. And unfortunately, it hasn't been made clear.
So who designated it as passenger side, quote unquote?
It was either police or the family, like somebody who saw it physically. So this did seem like a potential piece of evidence, but later DNA testing would show that it was in fact Tyler's DNA on the cup. So I just Googled the interior of a 2006 Mustang, and it does appear that the two cup holders are in the center console. And so in your what you're saying is correct for this car, which is in order for somebody to delineate it as the passenger side cup holder, it would be the cup holder in the door.
So they found his DNA
mm-hmm.
on a cup in the passenger side door cup holder of his car.
That's what it seems like, yes. So to them, that was indicating that perhaps he wasn't the one driving his car.
I mean, clearly, if it's your car and you're the one driving it all the time, like, you would never reach that far over to
right.
put your cup in the door.
Yeah, so that definitely struck them as odd. So by this time, we're talking 4 days after his disappearance, investigators had an idea of what items of Tyler's were missing. And those items included his wallet, phone, car keys, laptop, and camera.
Is that all just based on the fact that they didn't find any of those things
yeah.
in the car?
This is even before the car, right? Like, so,
or the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So before they found the car, like, you know, they obviously looked through the house, and his parents, of course, immediately looked through his room and stuff just to see.
Right.
And so that's what they had figured out by that point. They kind of knew that by the time they found the car, and it doesn't appear that he had packed a bag or anything like that. And the majority of these things that were quote unquote missing were items that, you know, he would have always left the house with, regardless of where he was going or what he was doing. According to Jessica, he never went anywhere without his camera. So it totally made sense that that was gone. The laptop is the only thing that may have possibly been out of the ordinary. You know, because people don't necessarily always take their laptop with them when they leave the house. But we don't know if he did or not. You know, nobody's ever said that that was odd or if that was normal. So we don't know. He could have also just always taken that. Now, the .22 rifle that he had just bought was apparently with him as well, because that has never been recovered. When police searched Tyler's car, none of these items were found, with the exception of his empty laptop bag and his camera, which was in the trunk.
He left his camera in the trunk?
Yeah. And that was a huge red flag, because if Tyler had ended up on this road because he had like some sudden urge to go on a hike or, you know, commune with nature or whatever, he would have taken his camera. And he certainly would have taken his camera over his laptop. Like, you don't take your laptop on a hike. This may lead one to conclude that suicide was his plan, but I still go back to the laptop. Like, why would you take your laptop if that's your plan?
Right.
You know, it makes sense to take your wallet, your keys, your phone, because those are just things that you normally take with you and it's habit, it's whatever. But taking something like a laptop, that's, you don't just take that when you're planning on dying by suicide. So even stranger, when the family was able to look at the photos that were on the camera, you know, on the memory card or whatever, Jessica immediately noticed that while most of the photos were there, I mean, he had a ton of photos on the camera, recent ones of her and Tyler riding four-wheelers had been deleted.
Hmm. Why?
Nobody knows. But she thought that was odd because it's not like the entire card had been deleted, nothing like that. It was those specific photos from what she saw. And again, you know, she wouldn't have known like every single photo that was on his memory card. So potentially there were others that had been deleted. But she knew for a fact that those had been on there and they weren't. Hmm. And to my knowledge, like that's not something that anybody ever figured out. It sounds like out of everyone, Jessica was the first person to get really worried about Tyler. There was no reason that she could see why those photos would have been deleted. He absolutely hated the outdoors, and the location where his car was found was a good half an hour or so from his home. Plus, the terrain was pretty treacherous. What's more is that one of his coworkers later claimed that they saw Tyler's car in the parking lot of their, you know, work on the morning of the 21st, but that he drove off without coming in. Now, they weren't able to see if it was actually Tyler who was driving. They weren't able to see if he had anybody in the car with him or anything like that. They just apparently saw the car in the parking lot and saw the car leave. Tyler never came to work. So the next day, after his car was found, June 26th, the Mojave County Search and Rescue completed a search of the area with no results. A few weeks after this, Las Vegas-based Red Rock Search and Rescue volunteered their services and completed two searches. Red Rocks came out with 40 people and 5 search dogs. Though the searchers didn't find any trace of Tyler, the dogs were able to track his scent through the woods, into a Girl Scout camp, and then back out onto the main road.
That's interesting.
Tyler's scent wasn't found anywhere else in the woods or in the area, so this led investigators to theorize that he had been picked up by another car. So yeah, there was no indication that his body was out there or anything like that, but, you know, based on the search dogs, it also doesn't indicate that somebody just dumped his car out there either. It seems like Tyler was there for a time, but then potentially, like I said, was picked up by somebody or left in another car under some other situation.
Right.
According to Kingman Police spokesperson Jennifer Sochaki, they moved the Mustang to the police department where it was processed by evidence techs. And then any evidence that was found was sent to the state lab. This is how they eventually found the DNA from the T, but presumably no interesting fingerprints or other evidence was recovered, as nothing else has been publicly released.
So based on the evidence, do they have any working theories?
Not really. Like, they're still, at this point, not convinced that there's been any foul play because, you know, the evidence says that maybe he was picked up. They didn't find any evidence of a body. So they just really don't know what to think. So at that point, they turn to his online life. And now this is where the case seemingly kind of takes a weird turn. Once the Kira Zetora profile that I talked about at the top of this episode was uncovered, strange suppositions and rumors started. There was talk of Tyler struggling with his gender identity because he had made this profile, you know, a woman. But, you know, Tyler also had like an emo kid look. Like, he was tall, he was skinny, he had like long dark hair. And so I think that that also contributed to these ideas as well.
Sure.
Jessica felt as though police weren't treating her brother's case with the urgency that she felt that it deserved. So she looked into hiring a private investigator pretty early on. Once she mentioned this plan to detectives, however, they said that they would stop investigating completely if she brought somebody in.
What?
Yeah. So apparently this guy who she was going to hire, they knew about, they didn't like him. His name was Lyle Sharman, and they said he was like a dirty cop and they didn't like his investigative skills. He's an ex-police officer, apparently.
Okay. But you can't just not investigate a potential crime or a missing person. Like, you can't just be like, don't like that guy, so we're done.
Well, yeah, but that's what they told her. And so, of course, she was completely intimidated, and so she backed off and didn't hire him at that point.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, who says that? Who does that?
The Kingman Police in Arizona. That's who.
That's, you can't pick and choose the cases that you want to investigate or that come before you.
I mean, okay, we could get into the whole things in recent years of protests against the police, which led to work stoppages by the NYPD and the Baltimore PD. And, you know, clearly this is actually something that happens quite often on a larger scale. But we've already got off on tangents. We don't need to get into that. The point is that in this particular situation, that is what police told the sister of a missing person.
Wow.
But, you know, ultimately, it didn't even matter because Kingman Police, like, soon pretty much dropped the case anyway. After a while, and despite multiple tips, they weren't able to uncover any solid leads and eventually allegedly told Tyler's family that, quote, he probably ran off with a gay lover.
What?
I don't know.
Where does that theory come into play?
No idea. I mean, and it's infuriating because, like, one, it's completely dismissive, and two, there doesn't actually seem to be any evidence that Tyler was gay or that he was planning on running off with anyone. This whole thing seems to be related to the rumor that he was questioning his gender identity, which, again, still doesn't make him gay.
Right.
First of all. And, like, also, there's just no proof of any of this.
There's no proof of any of this. Like,
any of it.
Any of it, him questioning his gender, none of that.
Yeah.
There's no proof of any of it.
No, and in fact, we have evidence that the opposite was true. Like, remember, he told coworkers that he had a girlfriend, whether or not that was actually the case, but, like, he was saying, I have a girlfriend. And according to Jessica, he had apparently been seeing a woman briefly prior to his disappearance.
Yeah, and while that doesn't necessarily mean you are straight or
right,
gender fluid or whatever.
Yes, you're correct. However, like, there's more evidence saying that he's straight than there is that he's gay.
Or that he's just not questioning it.
Yeah, or, like, and again, this whole thing with, like, running off with a gay, like, I don't know. This
but that's
theory.
But all of that aside, it's incredibly dismissive to just be like, he ran off with whomever.
Because, again, there just isn't the evidence, but it persists, like, even to this day. You know, it is a main theory in this case that he wanted to be Kira, you know, not just online, and he didn't think that his parents would accept it, and so he ran off in order to transition and live his life.
But that's insanely presumptuous. Like,
yeah,
you don't, like, you have no idea. You're just making this shit up.
Right. And, you know, we don't know how his parents, like, would have reacted if they wouldn't have accepted him. But regardless, like, we do have a pretty good idea that, like, at least his sister Jessica would have been fine with it. And he never got in touch with her, you know? He was so close with her.
Right. It seems like the local PD presented a theory or ran with a theory, and we're just like, that's it.
Yeah.
We're done. We barely investigated this to begin with. His chai tea was in the passenger side, so clearly he had a gay lover. Like, it just, they're just like jumping to all of these conclusions to not do their job. That's absurd. I don't understand it.
I do think it's funny that, like, you're so shocked, even though police not doing their jobs is like a recurring theme in this show.
I am not shocked. It just infuriates me every time we have a case like this.
Yeah.
Every time. Because, like I've said, there's no training for missing persons. There's no focus on missing persons. And anytime that we have done this, it's just police departments making excuses for not wanting to get involved, hoping that this person comes back on their own.
Yeah.
And you've said it yourself, based on statistics, they'll come back. Except how many times have we seen these lead to other larger investigations? So you can't, as a police department, even dismiss it and say, we're not going to investigate that because that will take time and resources and money away, blah, 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 blah. When it could potentially lead to a murder investigation, it could potentially lead to a larger cold case investigation, it could potentially lead to sex trafficking investigations. It's just fucking absurd to me.
So despite Kingman police, you know, losing interest in the case, Jessica persevered and eventually did hire that PI. Lyle Sharman with United Private Investigations began working on the case. We don't know much about the direction of his investigation, but we do know that Jessica had not only begun to suspect foul play, but she believed the perpetrators were Tyler's parents.
Why would you say that? Why?
Good question. Well, so first was probably the simple fact that she didn't feel as though they were as concerned about Tyler as they should have been. You know, I keep on talking about how she's the one leading the charge because she was. It was not his parents at all. It was Jessica from the very beginning. Once Tyler's Mustang was released by the police department, Brian, his father, apparently took it as his own car and, you know, just started driving it around. And then about 2 months after his disappearance, 2 months after, not like 2 years, 2 months, they sold Tyler's old car, which was a Volvo, and they turned his bedroom into an office. So 2 months in, they seemingly did not think he was coming home. Stephanie ended up doing an interview with Jessica about Tyler's disappearance for the Unsolved podcast, but after that, neither parent has spoken publicly. Stephanie was also allegedly upset that Jessica was giving out too much information on that episode. But, you know, it's tough because these are suspicious, and I get that, but, you know, it could also be written off as like, all right, so the thing with Brian driving Tyler's car, it's like, okay, well, the car is here. What else are we going to do with it? We might as well use it. The thing with turning his bedroom into an office could be explained away as, well, he ran off with his gay lover. Why would we need to keep his bedroom? You can see it either way, though, right? Like, it could be suspicious. It could be because they thought he ran off of his own volition and he was an adult at the time. So they were just moving on. As suspicious as this could potentially be, what's way more upsetting is Brian's past. In 1997, just a year after Tyler was born, Brian was convicted of immoral and indecent acts with a minor. He was apparently sentenced to 16 years in prison, though I couldn't find out how much of that he actually served. It does not sound like it was anywhere near 16 years. And, you know, this is obviously bad enough, But what's worse is that the victim was his stepdaughter, Jessica Curtis. Jessica would have been about 10 or 11 at the time of his conviction. So, you know, who knows how young she was when this actually happened. Brian had to register as a sex offender in Wisconsin and then in Arizona once they moved there. He is still registered as a level 2 or intermediate sex offender. So that's somebody who has a moderate risk of reoffending. Though in this part, I wasn't able to confirm, but I did read in one source that he actually did reoffend because in addition to Jessica, he actually also assaulted her friend. So this is obviously disgusting and horrible, but what's even worse is that Stephanie took him back after he was released from prison and remained married to him after he sexually assaulted her daughter. Remember how I said that Tyler was close to his father? Apparently, he didn't know about any of this while he was growing up. And so that's what makes me believe that Brian didn't serve anywhere near the 16 years, because had he served that 16 years, I mean, that would have been the majority of Tyler's life, and he would have had to know that something was going on. So apparently Tyler did not, and had actually only found all of this out a few months before his disappearance.
Which I'm sure people have theorized led to his suicide.
Yeah, or anything, right? Like whether it was just him running off or any of it, you know, you could point to this as a motive. So, you know, obviously this harmed their relationship greatly. And, you know, Tyler didn't know what to do with this information. It does seem, though, like right before his disappearance, he was trying to repair the relationship somewhat. You know, that day before he disappeared, the 20th, he did hang out with his father during the day, apparently. And then, like I said, later went and played video games and was playing on his PlayStation till 1 a.m. But yeah, I can't imagine the turmoil that he had to have been going through at the time. You know, he was close with both his sister and his father, but never knew about this horrendous thing that his father did. And then to put his mother's betrayal on top of it. Like, this kid wrote poetry, you know, he was clearly sensitive. And so I can't imagine how much this information would have fucked with his mental health. So by this time in 2016, Jessica was 30 and living in Phoenix, about 200 miles or 322 kilometers from Kingman. After his disappearance, she worked tirelessly to find her brother, despite, you know, the distance. Like, this is several hours away that she lived. In reading about her dedication to Tyler, it's hard not to draw the conclusion that Jessica simply couldn't deal with one more tragedy in her life, with losing one more loved one, because Tyler wasn't the first person close to her that she lost. In 2010, Jessica was living across the country in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, with her boyfriend, Chad Eaton. So at this time in 2010, Jessica had a daughter, Aaliyah Curtis, but I'm not sure who her father is. I don't think it's Chad, just based on the fact that her name is Curtis, which is Jessica's last name. But in any case, on May 24th, 2010, Jessica and Chad welcomed their first son, Caden Chad Eaton. But tragically, on August 31st, 2010, Caden passed away. I don't know what caused his death, but he had just turned 3 months old. Nearly a year to the day after baby Caden's death, Jessica gave birth to another son, Parker Lee Eaton. The family then moved to Levine, Arizona, but tragedy would follow them. On June 29th, 2013, Parker was taking a nap while Jessica got ready for a 4th of July celebration. When she got out of the bathroom, she noticed that the back door of their house was open. Landscapers had been working at her home that day and, unbeknownst to her, had left their pool gate open. Parker had woken up from his nap and wandered into the pool. When Jessica went outside, she saw her 22-month-old baby at the bottom of the water. Parker was rushed to Phoenix Children's Hospital, but 4 days later, he was declared brain dead. After losing her second son, Jessica turned her grief into action, starting a support group for parents who had experienced the tragedy of a child drowning. She also became a swim instructor in hopes of helping to make sure this never happened to anyone else. She lost two children within 3 years of each other. Then 3 years after that, her little brother goes missing. Jessica Curtis dealt with unfathomable tragedies throughout her entire life. I don't know much about her mental health history, but she allegedly had a really hard time after Tyler's disappearance, as you can imagine. Allegedly, Stephanie tried to have Jessica admitted into a psych ward at some point after Tyler went missing. And now there are theories that she did this in order to shut Jessica up and prevent her from continuing to dig into Tyler's case. But in my opinion, it's just as likely that this woman was genuinely suffering from depression or other mental health issues. Stephanie also allegedly got a doctor to prescribe Jessica Keppra, which is a drug used to treat seizure disorders. Now, it's unknown if Jessica actually suffered from seizures, so this is another suspicious incident that people point to. Because this drug also allegedly caused Jessica to suffer from memory loss as well as speech and motor problems. Many people believed and still believe that Stephanie was trying to get rid of Jessica. Jessica, after all, was convinced that Tyler had been murdered and that her mother and or Brian were involved in his death. There were apparently hills and mines behind her mother's property that she wanted searched. And I looked up the address on Google Maps and it is a house in the middle of the desert with mountains basically in their backyard. Jessica was incredibly active online and started the Find Tyler Facebook page on June 30th, just over a week after his disappearance. She posted regularly and was clearly devastated. Jessica never gave up on Tyler, never stopped pushing. That's why it was such a shock that on November 9th, 2018, Jessica Curtis died by apparent suicide. She was 32 when she died. Jessica was survived by her longtime partner, her daughter, Aaliyah, and their daughter, Emma. So, you know, I of course have no official information that Jessica died by suicide. There have also been rumors of substance abuse issues with her, but I can't say for sure. Of course, there are those out there who attribute her death to more sinister machinations, as they can't believe that she would give up on her brother and her children in that way. To my knowledge, there's been no criminal investigation into Jessica's death. And so at the end of the day, it's an unbearable tragedy. As I mentioned, Jessica was really the one who was working to push Tyler's case forward. So after her death, things pretty much paused. Fortunately, Jessica had another admin on the Find Tyler Facebook page, and this person continues to run it and post updates. In 2021, an anonymous person once again retained the services of private investigator Lyle Sharman. This seemed to jumpstart the case, and he posted that they were conducting polygraphs. However, it seems as though the money ran out, and Sharman left the case once again. Despite this, there has been some recent movement on Tyler's case. According to the B News, volunteers organized a search for Tyler in September of this year, 2022. It ended up getting postponed due to weather, but hopefully will be rescheduled. People have asked the admin of the Find Tyler Facebook page if there has been a GoFundMe set up to help pay for a private investigator, and they have said that there isn't one right now because no one in the family wants to take responsibility for one. So it truly does seem as though Tyler's parents have failed to take an active role in finding him. But whether that's because they had something to do with his disappearance is, of course, a question that we can't answer.
Right.
I mean, we just don't know. Like,
yeah, no, 100%. I mean, them not wanting to accept outside donations or whatever, that is not an indication of anything.
all we can do is amplify Tyler's story and hope that it gets to the right pair of ears who can help unlock this six-year-old mystery. I'll leave you with Jessica's words from a post she made on July 11th, 2016, about 3 weeks after her brother went missing. Quote, "Don't stop sharing. Keep his picture active. Tyler, if you can see this, please call your family. You have so many people that love and care about you. If you can't see this, I hope you know in your heart we won't stop searching for you." End quote. Tyler Stice has been missing from Kingman, Arizona since June 21st, 2016. He is a white male with brown hair and brown eyes. Tyler is approximately 6 foot to 6 foot 1 inches tall and 130 pounds. He was 20 years old when he went missing. He would be 26 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Tyler Stice, you can contact Silent Witness at 1-928-754-1234. You can also give a tip to the Kingman Police via email at adminpd@cityofkingman.gov. Please reference case number 16-18530. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.